fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Fantastic Friday to you. You've made it through another week. I'm going to help you kick off your weekend. It's The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Really, really, really good show lineup for you today. I can't wait to dive into it. Yeah, we are cracking open some fresh content here. We're cracking open. Yeah, cracking open a brand new show. And don't worry if you heard that can opening. That wasn't like a light beer or anything like that. Don't worry. It's just Pepsi. Pepsi Zero Sugar. And why am I drinking that? Because it has loads and loads of caffeine in it, like way more than the legal limit.
Mavericks re-engaging, sir.
Yeah, and I need that boost. I need that boost. And so Pepsi, if you're listening, you can sponsor me. Give me a call, 1-888-914-9149. And so can you. You can call me, too. Once again, that toll-free line, 1-888-914-9149. It's toll-free. The call's on me. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. You might also want to email us. That's more your thang. You can email me at cale@relevantradio.com, or you can tweet at me. Follow me on Twitter at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E Clark with an E, and of course the show account at Cale Clark Show. Lots of great things happening in the news. And, you know, one thing I want to get to later, I'm just going to tease this for later. I finally watched Hillbilly Elegy last night on Netflix, and I have some thoughts on that for sure. There's a Catholic connection to it. We'll be talking about that later in the program. So if you're interested in that, if you've read the book or seen the movie, you might want to just file that away, and you might want to get on the horn and get your place in line on the phones, 1-888-914-9149. But I want to start with this. Time magazine, you might have seen this today, big news. For the first time ever in 2020, has named not just a person of the year, and I don't know who their person of the year is yet. I don't think they've announced this yet. But they did, for the first time ever, name a kid of the year. I don't know if you saw this, but this has been all over the place in the news, social media. And Time's first ever kid of the year is really, really well deserving of this honor, I think. And as a hashtag girl dad, and you all know about Michaela, and you know, we all have hopes and great dreams for our kids. I was looking at this story with a lot of interest. And the person who won this year, she's a 15-year-old girl who lives just outside of Denver in Colorado. And her name is Gitanjali Rao. Gitanjali Rao. And she's really into STEM. And if you don't know what STEM is, what planet have you been living on? No, STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And there's lately been a huge push, especially to get, you know, girls interested in these fields, because they're really, really underrepresented in these fields. Well, I'm telling you, Gitanjali has already inspired tons and tons of kids. And it's amazing what she's done, even at this age of tender age of 15. She started doing this way before, by the way. She has used technology. And she got interested in this, by the way, when she was about 4 or 5 years old. One of her uncles gave her a chemistry set as a gift, and she played with it like all day long. And that just fired her interest in science and technology. And she has tackled issues ranging from fighting contaminated drinking water to opioid addiction, fighting cyberbullying. I mean, not bad for a 15-year-old. And she was interviewed, if you go on YouTube on the Time Magazine channel, the actress Angelina Jolie interviewed her about her work. And she was about 10 years old when she told her parents that she wanted to research something called carbon nanotube sensor technology. And her mom was like, what? And what happened was she had caught a news item about the crisis with lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. And of course, you'll remember that story, that very, very tragic story. And it just bothered her that children her age were basically drinking poisoned, contaminated water. So Gitanjali Rao said, I'm going to do something about this. And so she created this device on her own using, you know, modern technology, and it connects with a smartphone app where you can test your own water at home for lead. Unbelievable. So she was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show at this time. She did a TED Talk when she was about 13 years old. You can look at that on YouTube. I'm sure the views for that are going to go through the roof now that she's won this award as the Kid of the Year for Time Magazine. It's just unreal. And she also created this app very recently called Kindly. And Kindly it also has sort of an extension for the Chrome browser, the Chrome internet browser, and it detects cyberbullying. And it's really interesting. It's kind of like a little filter, and it can tell whether you're about to cyberbully another kid online through social media. And by the way, she's not on social media. I don't know if she is now, but she wasn't as of a little while ago. She said her parents don't allow her to have social media accounts. And I think that's a really good thing. We talked about even adults, maybe that's not even a great thing for adults sometimes, but this kid, now when you go on YouTube and see we'll link to these videos, by the way, on the show page, we'll link to the Time Magazine story and the accompanying video. This kid, Gitanjali Rao, 15 years old, she has the poise of somebody who's about 50 and the maturity of somebody in their 50s. And she has zero, like, she's completely unself-conscious. When you hear her talk, she is so poised and so, like, I'm blown away by this kid. Just unreal. Really, really interesting character. And she's helping right now to create a new program for detecting biocontaminants in water. You know, just your average weekend project, right, for a 15-year-old. Trying to counteract things like parasites in underdeveloped countries in the water. She's mentored over 30,000 students through this program she's created. So she's really inspiring others. It's just incredible. She says with her biocontaminants work, she's trying to figure out a gene-based therapy solution. She says she's still trying to figure it out. Oh, get it together, girl. Come on. What's wrong with you? Anyways, no, she's well ahead of the game. And she said this. This is really a great great quote from her in the Time Magazine article. She says, my goal has really shifted not only from creating my own devices, but to inspire others to do the same as well, to help solve the world's problems. Because from personal experience, it's not easy when you don't see anyone like you. So I really want to put out that message. If I can do it, you can do it, and anyone can do it. So really well done. Congratulations to Gitanjali Rao. 15-year-old girl living outside of Denver, Colorado. So as a young woman, and also as a person who's from a visible minority, she's from an Indian background, she wants to inspire others who don't see maybe people like them in these fields that, yeah, you can do it too. So really, really cool stuff. And so here's my question. Here's my question for you, and you can call in 1-888-914-9149 on the Gale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Again, as a girl dad, as a hashtag girl dad, I'm keenly interested in this story as a parent. Here's my question for you. Do you need to be a tiger mom or a tiger dad for your child to become a high achiever or to reach their potential? If you look at the Time Magazine story about this girl on their YouTube channel, the very first YouTube comment is from some guy who's like, hey, listen, I'm from an Indian family, and I can tell you this. Every Indian parent in the world who's reading this is going to say to their kid, why can't you be more like her? There's a lot of pressure sometimes to achieve and to be a high achiever. And do you really need to do this for your child to be a high achiever? Or are you somebody who had, if you're listening out there, if you're an adult, you know, if you had a tiger mom or tiger dad yourself, was that a help for you as you were kind of working through your academic career and working through your professional life? Or was that actually a hindrance for you? Do you have some resentment about that? And so I just think it's a really fascinating story on several levels. And I had a friend one time who studied a lot of, I guess you could say, child psychology, if you will. And one of the things that he told me was that a child's brain is every bit as intelligent as an adult's brain. Like, they are incredibly intelligent. And sometimes we don't give kids enough credit for what they can do. The only thing they lack is experience. They don't have the life experience, but they can figure things out at a very, very young age. The brain is just phenomenal in young people. And she's a great example of that. And when she was in the second grade, Gitanjali Rao said that she had a teacher named Miss Stockdale when she was in second grade. And Miss Stockdale looked at her and she said, you are going to change the world. You are going to change the world. And that inspired her to really get on this path. And she talks about it to this day. Was there somebody who believed in you when you were younger that just kind of changed your life? Maybe it was a teacher, a parent, somebody from your local parish, Because we all need that, right? We need somebody to believe in us and give us that chance and make us think, yeah, we can really do it. So I don't know. I just thought that was an incredible story on a lot of levels from Time Magazine with their Kid of the Year this year. It does take somebody, I think, to believe in you, to give you the confidence to get you going. Wait, listen to this audio clip from the Time Magazine story on this.
I don't think I can say there was like an aha moment where I was like, this is what I want to do. It was rather just like this continuous like learning and loving more about STEM and science and technology. But I can tell you a huge changing moment in my life was about, I want to say when I was 4 or 5 years old, my uncle got me a chemistry kit and I felt the need to finish the whole thing in one day. And I did. A lot of my devices are based on biology, chemistry, physics, computational method. This process, it's usually spread over a couple of months, even years. It's just based on how I feel about it and how I get inspired by something. I don't force myself through the process. I don't do anything to accelerate it. I do it at a pace which makes me feel excited and makes me want to keep going. See, that's the biggest thing about innovation is if you don't have that motivation and drive to keep going, it's going to be dry. It's not going to be something you enjoy doing or anybody else is going to enjoy hearing about.
Yeah, is this girl poised or what? That's unbelievable. And that's great insight, such mature insight. We talked about this yesterday on the show when we were talking about Zach Seeler from the Miami Dolphins, this idea that, you know, when your passion and your abilities coincide, you've got fire there. You know, when you discover your purpose, you know, that then you really can get going for God and God can do great things through your life. He can display his glory through you. And so I really like what she has to say again about this concept of you've got to be passionate about it. It can't be something that you're kind of forcing yourself to do. And she had this natural aptitude for STEM, for science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and she was just drawn to it. And she really was concerned about other people, other kids, like I said, in Flint, Michigan, who were drinking tainted water. She wanted to solve that problem. She did something about it. And it's just unreal. And I don't know if she's, you know, I don't know what her faith background is. I don't know if she's a Christian, a Catholic or not. But I do think, you know, if she had that working for her too, and if we had that, you know, if anybody had that working for them, that just takes things to even another level. She's trying to do things to help others. But, you know, when you have a Catholic worldview, you see that you're trying to help others, not just to help them, but to help them to achieve the goal that God has for them as human persons. And I had another friend who has done a lot of deep thinking on the business side of things in terms of, you know, not STEM necessarily, but on business. And he's, you know, this could be true for any profession. Really, the pinnacle of creation is the human person. God created the universe for man and woman. You could even say woman was the pinnacle of creation because she was created last. But having said that, the world, the universe was created for humans, for men and women. And, you know, a lot of extreme forms of environmentalism. Yes, we should care for the planet that we live in. A lot of extreme forms of environmentalism would say that, no, we're parasites on the earth. No, we're not. The world was created for us to flourish and to find God as well. And so what my friend, his name's Paul Tomori, what he will do is, like, he will often ask people in seminars, what do you think is the purpose of business? And very often the answer will be to make a profit. He's like, no, that's a terrible, terrible purpose. The purpose should never be to make a profit. Of course, you have to make a profit to survive, to be viable as a business, but that's not your purpose. Your purpose should be to create a product or a service that's going to serve humanity. It's going to serve the human person. And that's what you really need to be thinking about. So this is a total different mindset. Anyways, but I just thought that whole story was really fascinating. If you want to comment on that, if you have any thoughts on that, 1-888-914-9149. If you're a Tiger parent, you know, hey, do you need to be for your children to achieve high goals and lofty aspirations in life and be all they can be? 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. We're going to go to the phones right now. Actually, Rose is calling from Ridgefield, New Jersey. Rose, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you. Can you hear me?
I sure can. I sure can. Go ahead, Rose.
Oh, great. Great. It's wonderful to get through because I love your show.
Oh, and, thank you.
And I also listened to the other show on about Revelation. And it's absolutely wonderful. I just can't tell you how much it means to me and how much it has enhanced my faith. Anyway, I could go on and on about that, but I won't because I'll answer the question that you were talking about. Because actually, my son is grown up now, and he's very mm-hmm. successful. But when he was young, like 3 years old, I was like a tiger parent. I wanted him, in fact, I always used to call him my A student. And as it turned out, he was no A student. He hated school. But what happened was, so I backed off. Mm-hmm. And it turns out he was in a wonderful school system and let children develop their own interests. And one day he happened to see a horn sitting in the corner, and mm-hmm. he started to play.
Wow.
And that's where his talent was, and that's where his interest was. And he went on to graduate from one of Manhattan School of Music, which is the biggest conservatory in the world. And he's been very successful. So that's my advice to parents, is to watch your child. Of course, we always want our children to be the people God created them to be, mm-hmm. and not what we want them to be.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point, Rose. And that was obviously something he had a natural aptitude for. And he kind of took to it. And he probably didn't have to be forced to practice, right?
No, well, you know.
Or maybe he did.
He knows the horn. No. I actually stepped completely back because he happened to be a very strong-willed child. And I realized early on, there's no way to fight. I'll just, you know, let him, you know, and guide him, of course, guide him, obviously, mm-hmm. as a parent. But he practiced on his own, and he really did a lot on his own.
Yeah, well, that it's amazing. Like in personality types and in knowing exactly, you know, what motivational techniques are going to work with each child. You know, they're all so unique and individual. Yeah, that's an art form, really. And as a parent of a young child, you know, I need all the advice I can get. So that's a really great story, Rose. And thank you very much for your kind words. It's very humbling. And thank you so much for listening to both this show and, of course, also the Faith Explained program as well. And I'm glad it's been helpful for you. And I'm thankful to the Lord for that. So thanks for your call, Rose. And may you have
Amen.
A blessed weekend.
Amen. I hope they keep you on. Father Rocky, I hope you're listening. Keep this man on. Okay, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Rose. Yeah, who knows? If Father's listening, hey, I might be able to keep going with this. Anyways, thank you very much for that call, Rose, and for your support. I really appreciate that. Wow, that's a great call. And listen, if there are any other parents out there with advice for me, you know, as a young dad, hopefully I'm still young, I don't know. But I know my child is young for sure, and I want to make good choices, you know, as a parent, you know, in terms of, you know, how to direct them, how to motivate my daughter to do well. And she's got a lot of talent and intelligence. All that comes from her mom, of course. But hey, I was part of it. Anyways, glad you're part of the program today. We're going to be back after this quick break on Relevant Radio. It's the Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149.
How many Christmas ornaments can you put on a tree? Hi, this is Father Rocky with another Advent inspiration. The number of Christmas ornaments you can put on a tree is directly proportional to the size of the tree, the number of the branches, the size of the ornaments, the time you have available, and your determination. If you've been paying attention, that's a 5-variable formula, so the possibilities are huge. It also depends on how many ornaments you have. Personally, I like all of the ornaments, and the tinsel, and the garlands, and the lights, and the candy canes, but the ornaments I like best commemorate some great occasion, like Billy and Carrie's wedding in 2008. or the year the Cubs won the World Series, or the canonization of John Paul II, or the one my sister made by hand when she was a child, or the one of the manger in Bethlehem made out of olive wood that I bought in the Holy Land last Christmas, or the one from Relevant Radio that says the number to call is 877-291-0123.
To hear this or any of Father's Advent inspirations, visit us on our mobile app or at relevantradio.com/advent.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I don't know what your weekend plans are. Maybe you're going to kick back and watch some Netflix. And maybe you're planning on watching Hillbilly Elegy. Now, this is a Netflix film that's gotten a lot of attention, some positive, some negative. Some people don't think it's a really great movie as a movie. But it's directed by Ron Howard, who, of course, directed Apollo 13. Of course, you know him from Happy Days. At least that's where I first met him. And he's a very famous director. And we've got a pretty high-powered cast in this film, too. Glenn Close is in the film and plays the grandmother, or the Maymaw. I think that's how they pronounce it in the film. And Amy Adams, who's really a very talented actress. She probably should have at least one Oscar by now. She plays Bev, who is the mother. By the way, this is based on a real life story. She plays the mother of J.D. Vance, who wrote this book, Hillbilly Elegy, which came out in 2016. And I know our very own Patrick Alog, who's screening the calls right now, is in the process of reading the book. So if you do want to find out what the book is like, call Patrick, 1-888-914-9149. If you don't want to talk to me on the air, you can at least talk to Patrick about this book, because he seems to be loving it. And I've had several friends who have read the book, and they thought it was quite powerful. So I have not read the book. Disclaimer, I have not yet read the book. But last night I did check out the movie. And I want to bring up Karen Moran, who's, of course, the co-host, along with Father Rocky, of the Family Rosary Across America on Relevant Radio, which will happen later tonight after Timory's program. And Karen has also watched this on Netflix. And Karen, what did you think of this film?
Wow, Cale. Well, we watched it as a family on Thanksgiving, which is kind of weird, but I have adult children. And, you know, it was the end of the night, and hey, let's watch. And I had heard about the movie, and I was like, is it out yet? I also have not read the book, but it's the kind of movie that makes me want to read the book now.
Yeah.
Because it was a little tough. It's a little rough. I mean, it's his memoir or of a little slice of his life growing up in rural Ohio. His family was originally from Kentucky, and it kind of shows the generational poverty that's in his family. But it's really the story of, you know, his overcoming all of these obstacles, but with a lot of inspiration from his mama and his mom. And even though his mom had a real troubled personal history as well, I thought it was pretty good. I too have friends who have not enjoyed the movie. So I don't know why I enjoyed it, but I don't know. I just felt like when I heard about the book, I was nervous to read it because I thought it would be very focused on the opioid crisis.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was very surprised to see that the movie didn't focus on that much at all. So now I need to read the book.
and the reason why I laughed when you mentioned that you watched it on Thanksgiving is, of course, you know, when you talk about, you know, family dysfunction, you know, sometimes people deal with that at Thanksgiving.
It's like, there you go.
Why add to it? But really, it's about a world where, you know, single motherhood, family drama, you know, addiction is rampant. You know, the opioid crisis affects a lot of these communities, these rural communities that are talked about in the book. And, of course, J.D. Vance did grow up in one of those communities. And he, you know, really, it is about the family brokenness. And one of the things that J.D. Vance has said, you know, I think both in the book, I've seen like excerpts from the book, I haven't read the book myself, but I've seen quotes and stuff that he's talked about in the media, where, as you alluded to, Karen, he wants people to, you know, realize that they shouldn't blame others for their issues, but that they can take responsibility and actually make something of themselves, as he did. I mean, he entered the Marines.
Right out of high school.
Yeah. Helped pay for university, went to Yale Law.
Right.
And certainly reached a lot higher than anybody, you know, really had done in his community.
You know, what struck me, too, is, you know, his growing up, the folklore was how smart his mother was. His mm-hmm. mother, you know, in the family, you know, it was like, I was the valedictorian or the salutatorian of my high school. And meanwhile, she struggled. So he knew the importance of being smart. And he was a smart kid. Just was, you know, by the grace of maybe the encouragement of some of the strong women in his family to get his act back together, you know, he got back on track. But, you know, I also just recently listened to a great podcast that it's on the Relevant Radio app. We have the St. Jose Maria Escriva Institute podcasts are all available. And I just the beginning of this week listened to the one that pops up right away, Family Life, the School of Virtue. And some things about that really struck me in light of Hillbilly Elegy.
Tell me about that.
I know. It's like, where, how, what? But some of the things that we learn in our family related to loyalty and toughness, resilience, order, you know, it's the kind of virtue that you can't learn from a book. You learn it from your family, right or wrong. And so you kind of, in this case, you see the loyalty in these generations. They stick up for each other no matter what, and almost to detriment, you know. So you see a situation when he's young and he's getting bullied, and the big, the older people in the family, that's how the movie opens. And later down the road, when he's needs to reach out for outside of the family for help, the family intervenes and says, wait a minute, are you sure you want this to happen to this person? And he recants. So, you know, you see the backward sort of I'm caught in a cycle of abuse thinking. But, you know, even in spite of that, his life has sort of blossomed into trying to figure out, you know, the right way. And I mean, when you told me yesterday that he had converted to Catholicism, I was surprised, but not really, because there's so much in our Catholic faith that can lead us out of brokenness into a better, you know, the person that God wants us to be. He's so honest, too, in his interviews. I heard him talking with another podcaster about even now as a parent of young children, he struggles with his reactions and and he has to calm himself down, and he credits a lot to his wife, Usha, who's, you know, just really his rock. And you know, he's just trying, every generation has to try and do better is kind of the story that I take away from it. But I think it was a great movie.
Well, I think I must confess right now that I didn't actually, it was getting kind of late last night. I didn't actually finish watching Hillbilly Elegy last night. I was planning on finishing it tonight. But thanks for spoiling it. Now I know he marries his girlfriend, you know.
Well, you would have known that if you knew him in real. I mean, I kind of knew that going into it. It didn't ruin it for me. Okay, and they don't really, it's not, it doesn't really get you all the way there. You know, I'm just going based on real life. I'm Catholic, and you knew that. So.
Well, there you go. I was pulling your leg, by the way. His girlfriend, Isha, now his wife, was played by Frida Pinto, who, of course, was in Slumdog Millionaire, if you remember that one. Good film also. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're talking about Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance. True story. His memoir about growing up in, you know, hard times in Ohio. A lot of these industrial towns in the Rust Belt that were kind of left behind when manufacturing moved. And a lot of systemic problems in these communities, opioid abuse, family breakdown, just a general sense of hopelessness. And, you know, I mean, we really can't solve this problem on this episode for sure. But, like, I mean, there are bigger questions about, like, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps only so much. But then you run into systemic problems in the culture. And anyways, you need help. You need some help from the outside as well. But we've got a little clip from the movie, which we're going to play right now. Just check this out.
You've always got a reason. It's always someone else's fault. Some point, you're going to have to take responsibility. Or someone else is going to have to step in.
Who? Huh? Who? You?
Hasta la vista, baby.
How many times have you seen this?
Oh, about 100. Everyone in this world is one of three kinds. Good Terminator, a bad Terminator, and neutral.
You're a good Terminator.
Well, I wasn't always. I had to learn. you could too.
I love you.
I promise that I'm gonna do better.
Candy, you gotta write your own life.
Don't make us your excuse, JD.
Okay, well, that's powerful. So yeah. Here's my question for you, Karen. Are you a good Terminator, a bad Terminator, or neutral?
Or am I neutral? Ooh.
Don't answer that.
Neutral. Yeah. I have seen shades of both, of all three, actually. Yeah, no, also, too, the idea of fatherlessness is kind of there. It's interesting, too, because, you know, his mama left Kentucky because she was unwed, pregnant mother. Yeah,
that's right.
And she left with her husband, you know, her boyfriend, and they married. Mm-hmm. And but even in that relationship, you know, as hard as that relationship was for his mom Bev growing up, they stuck together. And so it's really interesting how JD didn't have his father present, but lots of boyfriends in and out of the house. But he did have his papa, and his papa until he passed away. So. It's kind of, I don't know, maybe it spoke to me. I was raised with by a single mom.
Oh, really?
And my grandparents filled in. You know, we grew up for many years in our grandparents' home. I have three sisters, so that's a lot in the 70s to be a single mom.
Oh, absolutely. But,
yeah, and my papa was like my father figure, too. So, but maybe that's why I like it. It just was...
I didn't know that, Karen. And, you know, it's interesting because the people that do seem to really, you know, are very touched by this movie are those who have lived a similar experience. I read about this. I read a couple articles about this. And a lot of people are just like, man, that was my life. And that's why it is so powerful for them. And so I didn't know that about your background.
Well, you know, I see how much my grandmother and my grandfather helped us. You know, I know that with seeing something like this without their help, I mean, they're really, you know, the odds were very against us. But, you know, you don't know those things when you're a kid. You only know them later when you're an adult and you look back and you just have, you know, you just have gratitude for all that you did receive and all that you did not know or you were not aware of. So it must not have been easy, but...
And I like what you said earlier too. Like, and this movie does bring it out. There are certain virtues that, you know, even in these broken you know situations that come through, like loyalty in their case, and family being so vital.
Yes, resilience. It's just,
absolutely, it's powerful. And I think, all that stuff is just really fascinating to me. And like I said, Karen, what's also interesting is that J.D. Vance himself has recently become Catholic. He came into the church last year. And there was a really interesting piece in the American Conservative blog, which is put together by Rod Dreher. And he had an interview with Vance about his conversion. And he was asked, Rod Dreher asked J.D. Vance, you know, why Catholicism? Why now? And he said in the interview that he was persuaded over time that Catholicism was true. He was raised as a Christian, probably as some sort of a generic evangelical. But he said he never had a super strong attachment to any particular denomination. He was never even baptized. And so he kind of had a clean slate in a lot of ways. And when he started looking into the issue of faith, he started to look at the church that appealed to him the most on an intellectual basis. And he also had a lot of Catholics in his life that meant a lot to him. His uncle, by marriage, was a Catholic. Somebody, an author, now I must confess I haven't read this person, but René Girard.
Philosopher? I saw that in that article, guess. Too. And I
yeah, so apparently he was Catholic. Name. He was a Catholic philosopher. That's about as much as I know. But you know, apparently his writings influenced J.D. Vance a lot. And he said actually his conversion to Catholicism probably would have happened sooner if it weren't for the current abuse crisis making a lot of headlines. And he said it forced him to process. And ultimately it was a good thing for him because it forced him to process the church as both a divine and a human institution. And he has a 2-year-old son, and he thought about, you know, all that stuff. And one of the things that he realized about the church is that, you know, yes, the church is having some issues and experiencing a crisis in many ways in leadership right now, but one of the things he loves about the church is that it's very, very old. So he takes a really, really long view, a really bird's-eye view on the situation. He said... Yeah. to Rod Dreher, you know, are things right now more daunting than they were in the mid-19th century? Right. Are they worse now than they were in the Dark Ages? You know, is it worse than having, you know, three guys at the same time claiming to be Pope? You know, only one of them is a real Pope. Right. Is it worse than having the Pope move to Avignon, France? You know, maybe right. not, you know. And he sort of said that, you know, over time, you know, despite human foibles and sin, you know, the church still stands. And that really appealed to him a lot. So,
well, he should get Father Rocky's Mary at the Crossroads of History book, because
there you go.
It just packages it up really nicely how short time really is in terms of how close we are in relation to the biggest deal that happened in history, you know, 2,000 something years ago when Christ, rose from the dead. Just no big deal, right? But I mean, it's like in the history of all time, like we are so close. We're like within minutes of that, you know, compared to the history mm-hmm. of the world. So good choice, J.D. Vance. And I mean, for those of us who had it all from growing up, let's not take it for granted. You know, dig in. There's a lot there.
Oh, absolutely. And I just got that book in the mail because I got a box full of all kinds of Relevant Radio
awesome.
Swag that they sent me, like caps and T-shirts. And that book was in the box as well. Neck gaiters, yeah. So,
yes.
you know, I'm going to put it all on at the same time and take a picture of myself and tweet it.
It's great.
It's great stuff. And, Father Rocky's book, Mary at the Crossroads of History, it's a real winner. God is involved not only in the history of the world in a very intimate way, but also in our own personal histories. And I think that's one thing that we see from the story of J.D. Vance, that, you know, Hillbilly Elegy, as he talked about, you know, is really a struggle to find stability in your own life, and also how to become a good person when things haven't been easy for you growing up, and being a good husband, a good father, you know, a good mother, a good daughter. And, you know, one of the things he also said was that Catholicism, you know, it's not as if God's grace just kind of, you know, I mean, obviously there's enough grace in one Eucharist to change the world, to convert the entire world, but it's usually for us a process, you know, of being worked on and allowing God to shape us into who we're created to be. So it's very realistic in that regard. Anyways,
right. Letting the grace get in there and transform us. I mean, why resist it? You know,
why resist it? You know, resistance is futile.
Don't fight it.
Resistance. It's like fighting the Terminator. You know, you're not going to win.
Are you a good Terminator, or a bad Terminator, or neutral?
Let's all be good Terminators, okay? And that was a line by Glenn Close, who played Maymaw in the, I think it's pronounced Maymaw, I don't know.
No, come on, Cale. I had a mamaw and I had a grandma, but my mamaw was from Ohio, so I don't know. Maybe in Canada
you
it's
got
Maymaw.
It right.
It's Mamaw and Papaw.
I thought they were saying Maymaw in the movie last night, but anyway, so Mama, yeah, we'll go
maybe.
With
you have
we'll
Canadian
say it right.
sound on your Netflix, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. They say a boot instead of about. I've never heard anybody say that in real life, by the way. Nobody actually talks like that, just so you know.
No.
Just so you know.
Okay,
anyways,
really? No, I don't know. Maybe. There's some.
Well, it was fun talking about Hillbilly Elegy with you, Karen. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, great deal.
And thanks for sharing about your background, too. I did not know that.
Sure.
So, hey.
Well,
we know
you
each
know,
other live on Relevant Radio.
All that and underneath is underground parking. So I'm a very deep person. So
you got it. You got
many
it.
Many layers
absolutely.
To Karen Moran.
There are many layers to all of us. Absolutely. It's our family history. It's our personal history. The history of God's dealing with our lives. How is God dealing with your life? Give me a call. 1-888-914-9149. I forgot that middle part. 1-888-914-9149. That's the right number. And you can call me and you can talk to me right after this quick break on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans is available at relevantradio.com/Forester.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Well, producer Lucas has got me dancing in my chair here. Hey, we're kicking off the weekend style on The Cale Clark Show. We're going to go to the phones right now. Anne is calling from, this is the town where my parents grew up, Belleville, Ontario. Anne, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Lots and lots of Clarks out here.
That's right.
My mom's maiden name. And yeah, probably we're related, I think.
But we're all related at some level, right? You know, we all go back.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. What is it? 6 degrees of separation or something? Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's good to hear your voice again. You've called before, and it's good to hear you calling again. And what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I have 7 daughters, and I thought that I might be able to, just give you a few little heads up.
Okay.
As you venture into this.
I need all the advice I can get, believe me.
Oh, no, I'm sure you're not. I'm sure you're a very great dad. One thing that we learned pretty quick was not to disparage now too much.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
You know, well, to say, oh, well, we didn't have the internet and our relationships functioned like this. Nowadays, nobody does that, and look how blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you start sounding like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yeah.
Right?
They tune you out.
Yeah. So they tune you out. The best thing to do is offer like sincere criticisms, but also be enthusiastic. See it as an adventure. Go along with them. Right? And wipe the scowl off your face and carry on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that's good advice. So don't say, like, back in my day, we didn't have the Facebook, you know, we didn't have the Twitter, you know, don't say things like that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, even if you are a computer Luddite like me, I'm having trouble figuring out Twitter. It's a mess. But anyway.
Well, thank you. And Go ahead.
Oh, can I ask you one more?
Sure, absolutely.
I'll give you one more.
Let's do it.
Yeah, make the most of your relationship with your wife, and you will just thrill your daughter to the tips of her little toes. And it's because she'll be going to school with or be friends with or in a world where lots of her friends' parents are not together. And we noticed that our kids, even if Brad and I were not, you know, we never got into like a real brawl or anything ever in front of
that's
the children,
good.
Especially.
That's a good thing.
But they would be, but they were worried. They would worry about such things.
Every kid
separate,
does.
Right?
Right.
Every kid does. And they get that sick feeling in the. And so, you know, we just never did that. And, you know, a well-placed compliment when it's needed goes a long way for him or, well, for you, for her, and for your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's great advice. And, Anna, I do appreciate that. I think those are wise words. And thanks for calling in. It's great to hear your voice again.
Ah, nice to talk to you, too.
All right. Well, thanks. That was Anne calling from Belleville, Ontario, and appreciate that call. She thinks we're related. Maybe. She's a Clark, and there's a lot of Clarks out in these here parts, but you never know. One never knows. And one of the things that she talked about, which I really like, and by the way, just to for those of you who might have just tuned in, that's in reference to the first story that we talked about on tonight's episode. And if you missed it, you can always download the podcast later from the Relevant Radio app or relevantradio.com or Apple Podcasts and all the other suspects, Spotify. And we talked about Time Magazine's Person of the Year. Not their Person of the Year. This year they're having for the first time a Kid of the Year, and there are a lot of great candidates, but Gitanjali Rao, who's 15 years old, lives outside of Denver, is an absolute genius and a really, really solidly formed person for her age. Incredible stuff. So I asked for a little bit of parenting advice as a girl dad myself. And one of the things that you mentioned there, Anne, in your call just now was that make sure that you and your wife, you know, have a really good relationship because your daughter is going to pick up on that. And I know that's really important. And there's a writer, an author by the name of Meg Meeker, and she's a medical doctor. Perhaps you've heard of her. And she wrote a book about boys called Boys Should Be Boys, I think it's called. She also wrote a book called Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And it's a really sobering and eye-opening book for dads to read, girl dads to read, because she talks about, you know, girls that come in, teenage girls that come into her medical practice and the stuff that they're that they're into, the problems that they have. They open up to her, and she wants dads to know this is what's going on. And one of the things that she says, and we all kind of know this, lots of other people have said this too, that the relationship that the father has with the girl's mother is so important for, you know, your daughter's future. She's going out into the world and thinking about who to marry, possibly, if God calls her to that. She's going to look at your relationship with her mom as a benchmark. This is how a man should treat a woman, and this is what it's all about. So really, you have to set the tone there. And I think that's really true. And lots of people have given that advice through the years, lots of authors, and Meg Meeker is one of them too. Her book is really powerful. So if you're a dad out there, or if you know somebody who's a dad, that might be a great gift this Christmas to give them that book, Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters by Meg Meeker. Really, really interesting stuff. So yeah, that's what we talked about earlier today. And I want to thank Anne for calling in there to talk about that. You know, another story that really caught my eye, I got to say that producer Lucas alerted me to this. Have you heard about the speed skating nun? The speed skating nun. Yeah, there's a former U.S. Olympian speed skater, and her name at the time was Kirsten Holum. Now you say, well, is her name different now? Yeah, it is, because now that she's entered religious life, her name is Sister Catherine Holum, and she is a member of the Franciscan Sisters of the Renewal. She now lives in England, where she's been sort of sent there as a missionary to kind of start up their congregation over there. But she represented the United States in speed skating in the Nagano Olympics in 1998. And oh, I have some terrible memories of Nagano, because, of course, that was one of the years, one of the few times that Canada actually did not win the gold medal in men's hockey in the Olympics, with the pros being out there, part of the equation. And Wayne Gretzky, my favorite player of all time, the greatest hockey player of all time, and you can debate me on that, but I will win every time. Wayne Gretzky was not chosen for the shootout for Team Canada. How could you not put him out there? And Canada lost in a shootout to the Czech Republic with Dominik Hasek, and they won the gold. And anyways, it's a sore spot for me. But it was a good memory for Sister Catherine Holum, because she did pretty well. She was top eight in the world in her disciplines, in her events and speed skating. And I read a really interesting vocation story by her about how when she was growing up, when she was 16 years old, her mother basically sent her on a pilgrimage to Fatima. And here's a little clip from how God hit her on that pilgrimage.
I grew up in a single-parent home just with my mom and myself. But it was when I was 16 years old that my mom had this inspiration to send my cousin and I on a pilgrimage or a holy trip to the shrine of the Blessed Virgin Mary in Fatima. And it was there that I had a very powerful encounter with Christ and with the Blessed Mother. As we walked into the cova on the first day that we arrived into the area of the shrine, out of the blue, I heard this voice in my heart, and I heard the Lord say, "You're going to be a sister." And this peace and this joy just came rushing over me. And as we walked through the shrine, we went into an adoration chapel where they had the Blessed Sacrament exposed for perpetual adoration. And I walked up the aisle, and I knelt down, and tears just started to stream from my eyes. And it was the first time in my life that I truly knew that Jesus was real, that he was alive, that he loved me, and that he had a plan for my life. And I could barely even make it into the pew. I was so overwhelmed with joy at knowing the love of Jesus in that moment.
I think that's brilliant. That's just beautiful. Really, God basically just hit her over the head with her vocation. Hey, this is what I want for you. And it took her some years to get to that. She quit speed skating after this, and she went into art school and kind of didn't have too many Catholic friends and kind of fell away a little bit. But she came back to the Lord and eventually entered religious life, and the rest is history. So I don't know. For everybody, it's a little bit different. For some of you out there, whatever your vocation might be that God's called you to, whether it's marriage or religious life, the priesthood, there's so many vocations in the church. For some people, God just kind of, you know, makes his will known with a megaphone, and other times it's a little bit more gradual. But one of the things that she did was she went to Toronto for World Youth Day, walked across America with some pro-life kids to get to Toronto for World Youth Day, and that's really where her vocation was solidified. She saw so many young, happy nuns there, and she's like, I've got to do this. And right after World Youth Day, she entered the novitiate. And it's really amazing how much World Youth Day, St. John Paul II, impacted people, impacted my life too. That's where I started coming back to the Catholic Church, really. Boy, that's another story for another day. You know, my future brother-in-law, I saw him that day, World Youth Day. He was doing the Way of the Cross. He was playing the centurion that led Jesus to his death. So I always tease him about that, you know. And anyways, he's a great guy. His birthday was yesterday, and I didn't wish him a happy birthday on the air. So happy birthday, Joe. We love you. So there you go. I'm forgiven now. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Karen Moran works social media, had some great commentary on Hillbillyology with me. Lucas Holt produced, Patrick Alog screened the calls. Have a good weekend, everybody. God bless. Timory's next. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.